You know the landlord ring my front door bell. I let it ring for a long, long spell. I went to the window, peeked through the blind, and asked him to tell me what was on his mind. He said, money, honey.
Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Thursday, the 23rd of May. That was Aaron Neville listening to Aaron. Let's try that again.
Take two. Want me to do the counties again?
Yes, please do. Listening to Aaron Neville music from his new album, My True Story, and all the music that we will hear in our bumper music today will be Aaron Neville. He's going to be performing this Saturday at Mass Mocha in North Adams at 8 o'clock.
Hmm.
You can find out more by going to massmocha.org. And so we'll enjoy the Aaron Neville music from the new album, My True Story, massmocha.org, to find out more information. Welcome, everyone, to the panel. We have a lot of cool topics to talk about, a lot of interesting things, a lot of things that we can get. Here's just a little, what would you call this? This is a disclaimer, a little disclaimer. If we start going after each other, please know we still like each other.
On the contrary, we love each other.
What happened?
We've been getting some letters of people saying that when we attack each other, you know, that it's personal.
So you mean Rosemary attacked people while I was
Rosemary attacked Alan.
You can defend yourself.
Exactly. Well, but they felt we were picking on Alan.
Oh my gosh,
you're kidding me.
Well,
yeah.
They had a point.
But...
No, it's not true. He makes us laugh. And,
right.
You know,
we're all one big happy family.
The main thing is that everybody recognizes we do really, really like
each other.
So,
you know, here we go. So with that said...
How dare you say that?
Let's argue. Wow, here's the story. So Governor Cuomo was, as Ray just mentioned in his newscast, the governor is going to be in New Paltz today and is going to be talking about this tax-free New York plan. And he was in Albany yesterday doing this. And in the latest effort to energize upstate New York's economy, the governor announced a plan on Wednesday to turn large parts of the state university system into tax-free havens for new businesses opening on their campuses. The plan is Tax-Free New York, which will offer college-friendly companies exemptions from a wide variety of state taxes, including those on sales, property, the income of employees and owners for 10 years. Mr. Cuomo said, what do we mean by tax-free? We mean tax-free.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. So if somebody, let me just get this straight. If somebody is working for one of these companies, they don't have to pay income tax. Is that right? Is that what it just said?
I don't think the income of employees and owners for 10 years. So I don't know what that...
Well, the income means income tax.
So you wouldn't have to pay state income tax if you were a part of that company?
Apparently. That's what it sounds like.
Apparently.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds
like. So how does that work?
Well, here's what. New York, nobody likes... Rodney Chu used to, under old man Cuomo, used to be the tax commissioner. And his ancient, this is his description, Chinese grandfather always said, Rodney, you can't take that job because nobody likes the tax man. And the truth is, nobody does, but we all pay. But when we see some major corporation or the biggest corporation in the United States not paying any taxes, we don't like it because we feel we've been had. Now, when the governor comes along, and I talked to Liz Krueger about it this morning, one of the best state senators, she made the point. She said, well, you know, we all pay, but nobody likes to see others not paying, particularly, I'm saying now, the biggest corporations. Now, I think there's something to be said for some of this because our kids need jobs. These are obviously, if you're in the sciences and you're around it, it would be a good thing to have access to this. On the other hand, is the price too high? That's my take on it.
Well, my question is, I'm gonna step out a little bit of this conversation because I have a my wife is employed with a company that is part of this complex in Albany. So I'll step out, but just ask questions. And then the question being, so how do you, and I'll ask this of Rosemary, and that is, how do you run a university and just what Alan said of having the students be a part of that but basically privatizing it, opening it up as a strip mall for businesses, and say, okay, we are the students in some way are going to benefit from that.
Well, there was certainly no position taken in that question.
Yeah. I have to put a caveat on my answer. I have a very myopic view of this, and that's the view from UAlbany, which is now a subsidiary of the Nano College.
Right.
And so I think that there's probably benefit in this, which I have not studied. So I have to, those are my caveats. That being said, I think we're going to be here next year discussing whether the state should give Calieris his own state or nation. This is going
He's
to
the head of the nanotech.
He's Elaine, the head of the nanotech.
Elaine Calieris.
And the highest, yes. I believe, the highest paid
state employee.
See, his reputation precedes him. And now he already runs a campus that is independent of SUNY Albany. He's part of the governance of the university, except he's exempt from it. He has representatives there, but nothing that the university governance says pertains to him. He has an outfit that is now, there's talk about separating it. We discuss that here on this program, separating it from the campus.
Right.
So my questions and my suspicions are, is this being set up specifically for him or for Nano? And is the government able to tell us what the real benefits are in terms of jobs? And number two is college friendly. What's the college friendly part of Nano? Brings in a lot of money, tons of money. We saw that in the past year. I'm not seeing that flow down to the rest of SUNY Albany.
Yeah, and what would happen if Monsanto, for example, decided to set up in one of these malls? Would that be college friendly? What happens if the drone company sets up in one of these things? Would that be college friendly? But there's a larger question here, Rosemary, and I think we may agree on it. Universities were set up to be places where knowledge was created and where independent thinking went along.
Well, research and development, right? I mean, that was always, if you have a university where there is research that's being seen over, what's the word I'm looking for?
Overseen.
Oh, thank you very much. By faculty, and you work together, then that is good for the student and good for the university. Yes?
Well, yes. The question is balance. It's always balance.
Yes.
How far are you willing to go? Does the philosophy for professor, who adds little or nothing to the immediacy of, of this question of business development, does that professor get downgraded because he or she is not or the German professor, because they are not where the governor finds it to be politically expedient at this point?
I have two positions here. As an untenured professor at the University of Albany, I want to say it's fabulous, because that's the position. It is. That's the position
it's
of
terrific.
My university. The investigative reporter in me says, is my university supporting it because it's so massively supported by the state of New York? And why? This is Nano has not been an institution open or transparent, even as far as road changes on Fuller Road in the town of Colony. There was this great secrecy around it. So I have to say that I have this inbuilt suspicion and worry about it. I could support this, the idea that a business is doing research and could support the college. But A, I don't see that there's support. And B, show me the research that's coming out that of Nano that's improving the whole field. It's a big business, but is it research?
Well, I mean, the way I look at this, this is about jobs. And so, this is a tremendous incentive. And how many campuses are upstate? I don't know the numbers.
Well, most of SUNY is north of Yonkers.
Okay, so.
Yeah, 64 campuses.
This is the area.
The majority of those being upstate.
This is the area where the jobs are hurting. This is a huge incentive for businesses to come in. So there are those possible positive, and for college graduates looking for work, too, that this may help. Now, the interesting part of the article in the New York Times yesterday was CSEA's reaction. And I can't
fathom. That's the union.
Yeah, right. And they called it Cuomonomics. And I can't understand why they're against it. I don't understand.
If you don't pay, and by the way, they tacked on private universities and colleges to this. So now you get anybody who wants to be tax-free shows up on one of these campuses. And remember, we had Empire Zones, and they didn't work out in New York State. And then everybody starts to play with Empire Zones. Are we going to expand it? So do you have to be right on the campus? No, apparently not. You can be, you know, up to something like 20 miles, I don't know, away.
And just be affiliated with your campus.
Yes. So in other words, now we're going to have two classes of people. People who support the good people who are carrying the bedpans around, call that CSEA, and there will be less tax dollars because those people won't be paying taxes. That's why, Raymond.
I have a really stupid question. How come New York City area is excluded from this?
Because I think they feel that the
I think you're right. Look, Andrew.
Answer? What is he? Meaning
it's about job creation in upstate New York.
And from a political point of view,
that's where you want to go.
That's where Andrew Cuomo wants.
That's where you need the jobs most.
Well, yes, but also this governor is a very sharp and strategic thinker, and his thinking here is that I need votes upstate.
And you also have the real estate.
So, but you see, Alan, how that, you do have the real estate, but you can see, Alan, how that further your idea that you're setting up different classes. You know, you can be taxless or taxed, upstate and downstate. It's like further dividing the classes of taxpayers.
Well, and this article and from the proposal said that they will ultimately say which businesses qualify for the tax-free status and which ones don't. So if you are a Starbucks within that complex, you're going to be taxed.
So the you're student not student union businesses.
That's
the
right.
Fast food places.
But if you're making
still
loans, you probably won't be.
But if you are a large company, there's right.
I'll take the Starbucks anytime.
Okay, stop attacking each other. We'll get email.
Cut it out, boys.
But you know that we don't know that there's going to be a drone factory on the campus.
No.
But there could be.
Well, there could be. But don't. Yeah, we don't.
Could be
say
a Monsanto
that is,
factory.
Yes. I mean, there could be anything,
if
but,
you're
but
the
that's
head of
not
a major
the direction
corporation,
that they're going.
Joe, if you're the head of a major corporation and you and you're looking around to increase profits for your corporation,
yes.
And you have one place where you can be where you pay taxes,
well,
and you have one place where you can be where you don't pay taxes, that's the question.
Okay, so that is another point. So all this is, this announcement yesterday to me, was a continuation and expanding of what's already been done. Because already what we have there, the companies that are in this campus that are a part of it, already receive those tax breaks.
Right.
From my understanding, yes? So, I mean...
I think the owners and workers getting a tax break is new.
That is pretty huge.
It's giant, yeah. The largest salary in New York
will not be...
Hey.
So then you guys won't have to pay taxes.
Well, and then, and then
fair enough.
We keep on hearing the things that
I work on a campus. Do I get tax free?
No.
No,
you
because I'm
do
not part
not.
Of the damn.
It depends. Are your classes at Starbucks?
Yeah.
No, you don't know. You can see where the problems are in this.
Well, you certainly can see where the problems are and also when you talk about who benefits and who doesn't, there are organizations within this capital region that have become a part of that don't seem like they necessarily belong. So if you have a children's museum that was in Troy that's suddenly now going to the nanotech campus, you think to yourself, well, that's...
But that's not new jobs. I think the proposal, though, calls, the governor said, you have to prove these are new jobs, not just transferred jobs.
Creating jobs. Creating new jobs. Medical device companies, for example, might find tax havens of SUNY universities with strong medical programs, while schools with strong music programs might attract businesses with an artistic bent.
Well, I can just tell you that it has not so far surfaced that there's been connections with the nano colleges and scientific students in other departments.
I mean, we've got to see the details of this thing.
We do. Before, I know I'm criticizing and we haven't seen it.
No, but we're having a conceptual discussion, which is an important discussion.
I see.
It is.
It's a conceptual discussion.
You know, we don't know the details. You're quite right.
But can we also argue maybe, well, I don't know that we'll
sure
argue
you could.
About
Go
it.
Go ahead.
But that those details will be released when it's already said and done.
Yes, we certainly can. It's something I was going to say.
Okay.
Well, the fact that we're having this discussion now is important. The question is, will we be having this discussion 4 months from now and say, oh, by the way, remember that thing we were talking about there? Have any kids at SUNY at Albany actually gotten jobs as a result of this?
You know, because I want to go back to what Rosemary was saying is, you know, in the dead of night, all of a sudden roads are moved and a building is built and nothing was set. Nobody knew anything.
Right.
And I
can't sit here and say it's either really good or really bad.
Because we don't know anything about it.
We don't. And it's difficult to even, you have to have an escort to get into the building. Students cannot freely go in and out of that as they can other campus buildings. It's not part of the campus.
Well, you know, you're an investigative reporter. I have to ask you this because here we've had discussions as to whether or not we ought to be looking more heavily into the nanotech center up at Albany. And I've been warned off. I mean, literally warned off by some very powerful people who have said, no, Alan, it's not going to be good for you. Don't do that because this guy is the most powerful person in New York State right now.
Well, and I think certainly the major newspapers in this region and business reporters have worked very hard to try to find the
Larry
information.
Larry Wilson of the Times Union has done a great job.
Has done incredible reporting and trying to find out what is going on and have really been stonewalled.
Yeah, so. It's interesting that it is treated like a big kind of secret. And these are not antagonistic or unusual questions that the newspaper is trying to answer.
And every governor, Pataki, Cuomo, and all the rest have been wildly enthusiastic about building this thing.
But are there not national security implications here? Seriously. I mean, this is cutting-edge stuff as used by military and everything else.
It is, here again, it is security. My understanding is that it's security that is being offered by the state of New York and by the campus to the companies who are coming on. So we will offer you this level of security so you can do what you need to do, and we'll back everybody off from it. So if you are the multinational company and you're coming in and moving in to do this, then you'll have the room to breathe to do it.
I mean, international espionage as well. I mean, that's a huge thing. If IBM puts a building up, an important research lab, you know, and it's not on a campus, you go ahead, try to get in there.
Yeah, but why do we have to worry about it? The Chinese are breaking our stuff, are hacking every day, and finding everything we do.
Well, actually, you know, if it were GE, we would at least know that they are a defense contractor. And that was my cell phone.
Sorry.
Nasty
was happening.
It's on vibrated, but it's on the table, so it's making a really awful noise.
It's a robust vibration.
I was saying that, you know, if GE was involved in a contract, we would not know the details
don't have to
of
say that.
That
enough in the radio. Go ahead.
As soon as the government gets into trouble, Raymond, as soon as it happens, it's always they resort
all
to
right.
security.
Well, sometimes it's true, though, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But, in the minute that we have left before we go to a break, the whole question is, and maybe this is being overly cynical, but to your point, Ray, and which I agree with you entirely.
Uh-huh.
But should that be lumped into the state university system of New York?
I don't know.
I mean,
Rosemary
and that's
knows.
And that's where I
no,
mean,
I'm already afraid I'm going to lose my job. With
I mean, we can make the discussion about jobs. We can make the discussion about having these companies in New York. But when you tie it then to the university system, I think that is when the question becomes larger and much more has further implications.
Yes, and when you're a college president, the real question is, you know where the governor stands on this. You know what's up. Are you going to say, wait a second now, I got some reservations? You are not.
Also, and I will ask this to the two university professors, but if you, the next time a tuition increase comes up and I'm the college student and I ask, well, if they have all these companies there and they have all this money coming in, how come my tuition's going up?
Well, that's a great question. And if we're going to be participating in all of this and they come up with patents that are going to earn billions of dollars, Liz Krueger said this morning, shouldn't the citizens of New York be paid out also and be beneficiaries also?
You know, I'd even back off on my suspicions if I could see a report that said this is how many jobs have been created and we project will be created in the next few years. That there's been study after study on IDAs that give tax breaks, you know, in most municipalities.
And those don't work either.
They do not work. So I am a little worried, and I think those are good suspicions and questions.
We are going to take a break. We are actually late for a break, so
we'll
take a couple of them, and we will be we'll be back. We're going to have a news update. We welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We're all still friends as of now. Excellent.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll have a group hug, and then we'll be back after this short break. No, it's Aaron Neville.
Yeah, I know. Doing Dion the
Belmonts.
Yes. I thought it was the Weavers.
Yeah, I know you did.
They got these guys got a backbeat. Weavers weren't big on the backbeat.
Well, they had a backbeat.
Oh, really?
Sure. You just don't know your
just
Weavers.
It's very far in the back.
They had Evan removed when they were
Yeah, exactly.
But that was other. Aaron Neville, I'm going to be performing at Mass Mocha North Adams on someday.
Okay.
Saturday.
Oh,
on
good.
Saturday, yes. And find more at massmocha.org. Hey, we also want to remind you about the lockbox. We're up to, what, 106?
Almost over 107.
Yes, so, almost 107.
So if we wanted, we can do it.
Yeah. Now, the idea was if we could hit 333, it would be like a third of the drive.
When does the drive start?
June 3rd.
So that's a week from Monday,
June 3rd or
right?
June 4th. Or
a week from Monday.
Okay. Yeah, week from Monday.
I have to be here for that?
Yeah.
You have
okay.
to be.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Just checking.
Your agent hasn't checked
no,
in and told
no.
you when you need
As
to show
fact,
up.
I...
Yeah, it's June 3rd at 6 a.m. You need to be here for that.
Okay.
And we're asking here. I mean, we're asking everybody to just do a little something. If everybody did $10, we wouldn't have a drive.
No, we'd be done. The whole
Tens
point.
Tens of thousands of people listening right now.
And just because I know you hear the promos, I know you hear us talk about it, but the whole idea behind the lockbox is this came from people who said, well, you know, why do we even have to have a fund drive if people just gave the money before we went in? We wouldn't have to deal with this.
Yeah.
So, okay. You open up the lockbox and say, okay, it's on you. And so far, $107,000 almost, which is a lot of money.
Yes, it is.
But the more, the merrier, and the less we have to do. And the important thing is that we can have regular programming even sooner. So do what you can do.
Yeah.
And all you have to do, Ray, is go to WMC.org.
Yeah, and just look at that lockbox picture. The lunch we called it the lunchbox by
lunchbox,
mistake, but that was
yes.
that was a slip, I think.
Or the lockbox.
The lockbox.
The lockbox. And, you know, it all counts on day one. And I guess day one is coming. It's fast upon us.
But I want to make that point one more time, if I can. There are enough people listening right now so that if everybody put $10 or $15 in right now, tens of thousands of people listening, there would be no fund drive.
WAMC.org, WAMC.org, and
just you know, one of them.
And it wouldn't be, you know, we could have other fund drives.
Oh, sure, we
could. Don't worry about it. We'll be back.
But to skip one, that wouldn't be
bad. We could just pretend. We'll just go in and look, Alan, we need $1 million. Just start talking, baby. And you know.
I was hoping to win the lottery, and then we would not have had to worry about it.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen.
All right. Let us, WAMC.org, get in the lockbox. We'll update the totals as we go, and but that would be very, very helpful. And, of course, we thank all of you who have done something already.
That's right.
Let us talk about what happened yesterday. In Alan was talking about drones earlier, so we'll talk about this a bit. President Obama plans to open a new phase in the nation's struggle with terrorism on Thursday by restricting the use of unmanned drone strikes that have been at the heart of his national security strategy and shifting control of them away from the CIA to the military. In his first major speech on counterterrorism of his second term, the president hopes to refocus the conflict that has defined American priorities since the attacks of September 11th and even foresees an unspecified day when the so-called war on terror might all but end. That according to people briefed on the White House plans and printed in the New York Times this morning. What do we make of this speech that will be given at the National Defense University?
We'll be playing it today.
Two o'clock.
Two o'clock today.
Long overdue.
You want to go first?
Well, yeah, sure. long overdue. This is, I don't presume to know whether it's justified. It would seem to me that there is a use for it, but why the CIA controlled it and not the military is really bad, and I understand that part of the proposal is to close Guantanamo, which many Americans have been in favor of for at least the past 5 years.
Alan, what do you think?
The drone thing is fascinating. I don't want anybody to feel this is the Alan, prescription on this. But clearly, we sent boots on the ground into two places, right?
Right.
And the American people don't like it, and it becomes a quagmire. But we still have these people out there who would do the country harm. And the president of the United States knows that. And so, and his predecessor knew it. So if you can identify those people who are at the heart of the people that we're sending over to fight with all of those boots, and you can kill them with a drone, it's terrible, but it's preferable to sending a couple of 100,000 young Americans into this place. That's the argument that's been there. Now, the CIA and the Army thing is fascinating to me. You mean to say that if there is a decision made by the CIA that somehow that won't be taken by the Army as, is there really going to be a separation about saying Army versus CIA here? It's all coming from the same top status here.
This all came yesterday as well, where the government admits it killed four
Americans.
Yeah. One on purpose, three by accident, in its first formal accounting of drone strikes ordered under President Obama.
Yeah, the one targeted was, of course, a known terrorist. Although there had been no due process, as we are dealing with terrorists these days, all of the men in Guantanamo are in that same status. That's troubling. I mean, I don't think there would be much of a problem getting the legal right to go do this. But anyway, the government does that, and three other Americans who are engaged in terrorist acts against the United States were killed. I'm not sure that I feel like this is a terrible thing, but I do think it's really smart of Obama to be making this all much more transparent now. The whole drone thing has been a kind of secret policy until now. And drones, by the way, we should mention, are not just in the military. They don't just kill people. They spy on people. There are at least two journalism programs underway that would use drones to do reporting. So, I mean, talk about your First Amendment versus right of privacy, right to privacy. That's all under attack now with the use of this new technology.
And this is the program of targeted killing expanded dramatically under this president, and yet and he has called for transparency. So, at what point do you put the two together? I guess this has been
going on
since
2000. And will there ever be such a thing as transparency?
Right. And what is that? And how do you do it? And how do you
Here's that line again between
transparent national
security and the right of the people to know. But there has to be at least accountability, and that means you talk about having a program of drones, which has not been the case until recently.
When, as we mentioned, the president will be speaking on this and will be covering it today at 2 o'clock this afternoon. 2 o'clock this afternoon, as of now, anyway.
Right. The president will sometimes take his time. It could be 2:45.
NPR can sometimes take their time. So
it could be 5:30. I mean, we'll find out.
We'll see. While we're in when we're talking about terrorism, when we're talking about deaths in regards to how we deal with terrorism, this the story out of Florida yesterday was a very odd story having to do with what was going on. One of the Boston Marathon bombing suspects, Tamerlan Tsarnaev, who participated in the 2011, apparently participated in a 2011 triple homicide outside of Boston. And he committed this with along with a Chechen who was killed yesterday during a confrontation with the FBI and Massachusetts State Police in Florida. And the Chechen, he died during the interview with authorities. He not only confessed to his direct role in slashing the throats of three people in Massachusetts, but also said that Tsarnaev was involved in the deaths.
And he was being questioned about the slayings and his acquaintance with
an earlier crime.
Was an earlier crime going back to 2011. And I guess this all came from the information that was in Tsarnaev's telephone. It's one of those things where you wonder where all of this is going to, as it spider webs out, as to where it's going to lead us and how much.
Well, let's remember
a lot more to know, obviously.
Let's remember what happened. The fact pattern is very interesting. I think that's what you were saying. They all get into this hotel room with this guy, and then they start to question him. And according to you, and I think according to the news stories, he confesses. He said
orally.
Yeah. He says he did
and
all
they say,
of
okay, we're going to get it in writing.
Yeah, get it in writing.
But they take a break first.
Yeah.
Right.
He goes into the men's room or whatever, right? And he comes out. He's got a knife. Is that what I read?
The story said an object.
Yeah. And he slashes his interrogator.
He did need stitches afterwards.
Right.
And so then they shoot him, and he's dead. So the question is, how can an unarmed man be in a room with three FBI agents, the most highly trained, arguably, of all law enforcement agents, who are all armed, and get the upper hand like that?
Well, the other side of that one, Rosemary, just for the hell of it, is obviously that if you're willing to be a suicide bomber, if you're willing in the name of, you know, whatever your principles are, and that you might grab something and say, okay, you know, this is terrible. I'm going to be the sacrificial lamb. I'm going to do this. But it doesn't sound that.
So apparently, according to CNN, he was in his home. And
yeah,
then
it wasn't
he
a hotel room. And that was, I think it was home.
And he was in his home, and he went into the kitchen, and he grabbed a knife from his kitchen.
Yeah.
And when he grabbed the knife, that is when fatal force was used.
But after he slashed the person.
Preliminary information indicates that the agent took actions to defend himself. The agent sustained non-life-threatening injuries, according to FBI spokesman Jason Pack.
Just would be so much cleaner if he had signed the confession and then this all happened. It would be, it's just a little troubling.
So, nothing can be easy, can it?
No.
The FBI team is reviewing the circumstances of the shooting, a procedure, obviously, that follows any FBI shooting. And so we now wonder, you know, what else is... who else is involved? What else is involved? And as you say, there's still question marks even to
it's unfortunate if it is indeed, as the FBI says, that it happened this way, because it does raise questions even in my mind. I'm an American. What is a radical Islamist or a young Islamist kid in another part of the world going to think about Americans' law-abiding methods when this happens? It's unfortunate.
I agree. But I mean, if he was involved with slitting throats, then the interesting part about the CNN three pager on this is that the FBI have been following this guy for days, and one would infer that this was having to do with the investigation of whether the Boston Marathon bombings were in fact a much larger organization.
Right.
And so I guess we won't know now.
Well, and he also was apparently set to travel, and they wanted to get him before he was
before he got out of the country.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back. We have other stories to talk about, and we'll do that. We welcome your input as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Ray and Rosemary and
Alan.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Him.
Thank you.
Aaron Neville.
Aaron Neville, we'll hear him too. It's all coming up right here on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from the Francis Lehman Loeb Art Center at Vassar College, featuring works by Picasso, O'Keeffe, Cole, and Miro, open late Thursdays until 9 p.m., fllac.vassar.edu. Lakes to Locks Passage, the New York State Byway, supporting guided tours of Underground Railroad sites throughout the summer from the North Star Underground Railroad, Chesterfield, New York, lakestolocks.com. And Kingsway Community Schenectady, offering a continuum of care and services to area seniors since 1975, including rehabilitation and more, caring in the family tradition, kingswaycommunity.com.
Through a caravan, around the campfire light, a lovely woman in motion, with hair is dark as night. It rides more like that of a cat in the dark.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We are going to talk about an issue a little bit closer to home, and that is the mayoral race in New York City. Anthony Weiner has officially announced that he is going to run for mayor of New York. And the question that was posed in the Christian Science Monitor, which I thought was interesting, is Anthony Weiner for New York City mayor, ? Why he is no Mark Sanford. And I guess that is really one of the questions is, here's a man running for mayor less than 2 years after he resigned from Congress in disgrace over revelations about his extramarital, sexually explicit online exploits. So,
and lying about it.
Yes, and lying about it. So he did what I think any good mayoral candidate who has a lot of baggage. You make a videotape and you put it online
in the
middle of the night, and you don't have to ask. Yeah. Then you don't have to answer any question whatsoever.
Put your wife and cute little baby in the video.
No, oh, that's cute.
So, what do you think? I mean, obviously, he in the video acknowledges that he made big mistakes and is asking for a second chance. It'll obviously be up to the voters of New York City. But how important is he going to be in this race?
Well, number one, he's got a lot of money in his account. He's raised several million bucks, not from now, but from the old congressional days, which he's allowed to spend some of, you know, on this, depending on how he goes. Now, he has something going against him. And I am not trying to be funny about this, but the name Weiner, because the New York POST and the NEWS are daily
yep.
Hitting him with one pun after another on this, and yet he comes out second in the Quinnipiac poll. So what is that?
Who's got name
That's
recognition?
That's name recognition.
Yeah, behind City Council Speaker Christine Quinn. And right, so how much is that?
Don't you see that no matter what you say, it keeps reverting back to Weiner.
Yeah.
That's right.
John Stewart, the comedian, who is actually a good friend of the former congressman, yeah. said the name, it's like a
Absolutely.
Gift from the comedy gods.
I mean, yeah. if I say the word in the recent poll, everybody's name goes right to it. I mean, it's just very unfortunate. If his name was Schmertz, he would not be having these problems.
You know what else is unfortunate is that this kind of thing
not
plays.
The way they ask, yeah.
I think it's unfortunate that this kind of thing plays in an important race like this. You know that we do not, as a people, an electorate, bring a very sophisticated study of our candidates. There's great apathy. There's many people don't vote at all. If they do, they go in and they don't have any information other than name recognition, you know, some vague notion that I've heard of this guy. And that's how voting gets done. It's,
yes, and also, in this case, there's a group of very uninspired candidates. So anything could go as a result. Which is fascinating that he is number two in that what do you call it again? I'm not going to say it again.
No, don't.
Okay.
Survey.
Thank you. Ray. In that survey, or Oive. And here we are going to see, the New York people saying name recognition. We know this guy. Okay, we don't know any of the others. We don't know Quinn. We don't know Thompson. We don't know this one and that one. So we keep hearing his name. So I'll write that down.
The survey does indicate, however, even though there is the name recognition, there is also with that name what they refer to as the ick factor.
The ick factor, correct.
Right.
The ick factor. And because the jokes are back, the tweets are back, the pictures are back, all of this stuff that had sort of fallen by the wayside is now being resurrected.
Yeah.
So,
which is part of the story from the Christian Science Monitor. It's only been 2 years. Sanford waited double that amount of time.
Right.
So it's still all fresh in everybody's mind.
Well, but Sanford was a Republican who had a very specific conservative agenda. Right. And I think in his case, ideology played a large part. They were voting for him because he was not the opponent. He was not the opponent who was a liberal Democrat in a conservative district.
Yeah, the newspaper, the magazine, I guess it is now, made point of that, and also the fact that he's running for a congressional district, which is not nearly the high impact, high visibility post of mayor of the largest city in the
But
in
don't
the
you
States.
Think also that people are getting sick and tired of the sex stuff? To some degree, they're saying, oh, come on, you know, half the country's been divorced. Most of that was about sexual hijinks and the rest of stuff. And it's enough now.
It's why I also included in this and wanted to include in our conversation this Gallup poll, which shows that most Americans are still highly pessimistic about the direction in which moral values in the United States are headed. 72% say moral values in the country as a whole are getting worse, essentially unchanged from 73% last year, but improved from more than 80% in 2006 through 2008. 20% now say values are getting better, and 6% say they are staying the same.
Heal thyself, everybody.
What do you mean?
If you're concerned about the morals, then walk the straight path yourself. But don't cast judgments.
That part of the problem with this poll is, okay, what's moral value? I believe I'm moral, and yet there are many people out there who would say I don't have moral. I support gay marriage, so am I immoral? I support abortion rights for women. Am I immoral? In the view of many, yes, I am. So I find the poll troubling, and I think that our response to sex and scandals is more sophisticated than when you suggest, Alan, that we're going to just not concern ourselves with it now. I mean, I think there are many people who say, I do not like what Bill Clinton did, and yet, you know, he's the best guy out there. I like his economics, so I'm going to vote for him anyway. And if Wiener can come out with something that surpasses his transgressions, a great vision for New York, for example, he would be worth voting for despite his problem.
Well, you may be right. I think since you opened up the door here, on Clinton.
Pull the pin. Go ahead.
No, I think Clinton was being widely viewed as having been. No, I don't want to use that word, but really taken advantage of by the Republicans here, and it was a Republican conspiracy, and they knew it. People knew it.
Republicans hold more negative views of morals than Democrats do, according to the poll.
Surprise.
What do you mean by that?
What do you mean, what do I mean?
Oh, look at the time. We're done. Oh, jeez. We'll have to have this argument again.
We have a minute.
Republicans are just better people? Is that what we mean?
What I mean by that is that...
You have no idea what you mean by that.
Oh, I know exactly.
You're just taking a shot to take a shot.
No, I know what I mean by that. I know what I mean by
that. But you won't say it.
Republicans are far more likely than Democrats and independents to have negative assessments of moral values. Still, majorities of all partisan groups have negative views of morals. Also, Americans who are married... Those who are upper and middle income and those who attend church regularly tend to have more negative views on moral values in the U.S. than their counterparts.
If we're walking the straight and narrow, why can't they?
Right.
And on that note, we are going to we're going to call it a day on the panel this
Yay!
Morning. We'll be back tomorrow.
Okay.
Don't worry. We'll all be back tomorrow with many more topics to talk about. My thanks to everyone. Raymond?
Yeah.
Rosemary? Mm-hmm. Alan? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Roundtable at WAMC.org for more information. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.